Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. During 7 months of combating the Coronavirus Disease 2019, or COVID-19 pandemic, U.S. healthcare practices, especially in oncology, had to completely modify how they could safely treat patients. They may have reduced waiting room capacity, barred caregivers from attending appointments with patients, increased telehealth usage, or reworked priorities and postponed decisions. Some healthcare experts believe the pandemic will improve the overall uptake of biosimilars because it has made cost savings more important. Many patients face financial hardships as a result of the crisis. We sat down with Kathy Oubre, Chief Operating Officer at the Pontchartrain Cancer Center in Louisiana, President of the Louisiana Medical Group Management Association, and a member of the Board of Directors for the Community Oncology Alliance, to discuss what practices had to do without during the COVID-19 crisis and how biosimilar access has been affected. So, Kathy, when COVID-19 first hit, how did that affect your ability to incorporate newly approved and launched drugs, such as biosimilars, into practice at Pontchartrain?
Well, during the beginning of COVID, especially in its infancy, we were too busy developing policies, procedures around COVID to keep our practice open, our employees and patients safe. We were much more in survival mode back then. So it was difficult. Anything that was newly launched, newly available, probably got a little bit lost in the noise back then while we were focusing on, you know, just the much more vital issues of keeping the practice open, securing PPE, and ensuring our continued access to care for our patients.
And are you catching up with that backlog now?
We are. Q2 was pretty much a blur still. Q3, probably within a few weeks of Q3, we really started digging out to try and figure out what we missed in the entire oncology landscape during the beginning of COVID. And a lot of practices, when you talk to your peers, a lot of them will share that same sentiment. But then probably within a couple of weeks of Q3, we really started digging out, like I mentioned earlier, and trying to really figure out what we missed, what was relevant, how to incorporate it into our practice. And we were pretty caught up by mid-Q3, and we even made some midstream practice changes because of that. But that also allowed us to hit Q4, you know, on the ground running.
You've mentioned previously there was a blackout caused by COVID-19 that made it tough to keep up with pharmaceutical account managers. Can you discuss this further?
Sure. You know, to pharma's credit, in the beginning, you didn't have access to reps. No one was coming in the office. And it's one of those double-edged swords. We were so busy developing those policies and procedures and keeping the practice open that, you know, I might have gotten 200-300 emails a day, which is general for me. But there was just kind of that lack of interaction between us and our pharma partners. And I understand why pharma did it, and I thank them for it, because in the beginning, it was a scary new world for all of us. And they wanted to be respectful of the situations that we were in. But then, you know, the rub and the concern became what was happening during that time. You know, the backlog, and what did we miss? They weren't sending emails. They weren't making phone calls. They weren't entering the offices because we couldn't let them in and they couldn't travel. So there was just that complete lack of communication on both sides. And we knew life was continuing. I mean, products did launch during COVID. That was just a hard place to sit for those pharma partners because they wanted to have access to us to talk about those new launches, the new indications. But we were just not in a position to receive those messages. it's gotten better now. We're starting to see pharma partners in the office now. We've pretty much dug out, and they call me now. What's the best way to communicate with you? You know, do you want a phone call? Can we schedule a WebEx? Do you want it just by email? But in the beginning, there was nothing. You know, just communication went dead, kind of hence that term blackout. And it's been really interesting moving forward, because now it also has opened up an opportunity for what's the best way for us to all communicate moving forward. Does it always need to be that face-to-face? I think it's going to be that really nice middle ground of in-person meetings. WebExes, I think WebExes have a really good place in my life moving forward. You know, we all traveled too much, and I think a lot of us will admit it. I think there is a place, but I think there's also value in that face-to-face.
There have been few approvals of biosimilars this year, although there were 6 new biosimilars launched in the United States. Has that made a difference at Pontchartrain?
Absolutely. You know, any new launch of a new product is something that we're interested in, especially as we strive to always bring the most cost-effective, cutting-edge technology or therapeutics to our patients. Again, in the beginning, it was hard to keep up with all of those things. We have always been a practice that believes in the science behind biosimilars and its place within the healthcare landscape as a way to provide equally clinically efficacious products at a more cost-effective price to our patients. That whole thing about financial toxicity, you know, it's a buzzword to a lot of people, but it's real. Financial toxicity is real to patients. We knew that before COVID. We definitely have seen it more during COVID, whereas people got furloughed or their hours got cut. And that was a very scary place for the practices and patients to sit when you encountered those situations where perhaps they were in the middle of therapy or getting ready to start therapy. And their financial situation in November of last year might look very different than what it looks like now. And how do you have those conversations? What can we do? What do we have in our toolkit to be able to offer patients to help keep them on therapy, start therapy, as they're making financial decisions between, you know, their healthcare, food, transportation, and lodging? And those are real conversations, and we do have them more now than we did a year ago or the year before that.
Can you explain soft launches? And explain how these might one day apply to biosimilars and how you feel about that.
We saw soft launches in the beginning of COVID. And probably at the time, I wasn't even aware of what a soft launch really looked like. But I know there was one particular pharma partner who launched a product in probably late February, early March. And I remember receiving an email about it. And that was about it. Now, to be fair, I wasn't keeping up with my emails like I usually do, because we were so busy beginning of that COVID crisis, developing policies and procedures at 8 o'clock on a Sunday night, only to have to tear them up by noon on Monday morning because the CDC would issue new guidance, or we figured out very quickly it didn't work within our practice. And because of that lack of personal interaction between the practice and our pharma partners, we didn't really have a lot of interaction to know when something launched. And, you know, all of that marketing material and handouts and such that pharma partners create, well, they weren't even allowed to come to the practice and even drop something like that off. And if they did, even if it had hit my desk, it really wasn't a priority at the time. So I remember that same pharma partner coming to my office several weeks ago and asking about their product. And, you know, I had to be really honest. In the back of my brain, I remember hearing about it, but at the time, it just wasn't a priority. And so it honestly fell by the wayside. which was one of those things you and I talked about earlier. That was the fear of a lot of oncology practices and probably practices across the U.S. You know, what in the world did we miss out on? And how was that going to impact our practice for our patients and on our bottom line, which then affects our ability to keep the practice open and serve our patients? A lot of us spent the beginning of Q3 digging out pretty quickly. If you hadn't in Q2, we were probably fairly dug out within the first 2 to 3 weeks of Q3. And it did take a lot of work. You know, we updated our formularies, made some changes, but all of those things allowed us to hit Q4 running pretty quickly, and we're completely ready for 2021 without a doubt.
Could you please talk about your concern with respect to drug supply issues, including for biosimilars, if you think that applies?
So during COVID, we have seen supply issues, whether that was PPE, cleaning supplies, but we've also seen that affect our drug supply. We have seen chronic shortages on drugs that we never anticipated seeing those issues on. But past that, we have seen manufacturers of the molecule have issues, and whether that's staff not coming to work. So just the production of making those drugs or making those products to create the drugs has become an issue. And so it happens way before it can even get to me. We've seen problems creating the molecules. We've seen problems on the manufacturer side. And then we've seen problems in shipping those drugs to the wholesaler. Then we see problems in the shipping from the wholesaler to me. So it's, you know, it's kind of that entire continuum where we have seen, you know, supply issues, and that does affect biosimilars.
Related to COVID-19, do you anticipate biosimilars gaining traction among patients and providers as a result of the financial hardships people are suffering during this crisis and the low-cost advantages of these products? Why or why not?
Biosimilars always had its place in the market as a clinically efficacious alternative to the brand product, but at a lower cost. I do think that that is more important now during COVID, but I think that'll be very important moving forward. And we have seen the financial landscape change for our patients, whether it's been furloughs, loss of jobs, or just a reduction in their work hours. They are having a harder time meeting their financial obligations for their health care, for their, you know, living expenses, for their food, for their family. I do think that, you know, this situation that we have now is a great opportunity for larger biosimilar adoption within the healthcare landscape.
Well, Kathy, thank you for sharing your insights with us. And thank you to our listeners for tuning into this episode of Not So Different. You can find additional information in the show notes. And until next time, you can visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.